Well, welcome everyone to this webinar on Recognize and Eliminate Bias, the keys to being a better leader and team player. This is a really critical issue, one that ICMA has been highlighting, the whole issue of diversity and inclusion. It's something that's getting more and more attention professionally in the organization and throughout our communities. And so very, very important topic, and it's brought to you by the ICMA coaching program. Want to highlight that we're delighted to have such strong support from our sponsors, ICMARC and ICMA and CalICMA and all our state association partners. We're going to speak about them for just a moment. I want to particularly highlight ICMARC, which is building public sector retirement security. They are a big force, as you may know, in ICMA in helping to recognize and support everyday heroes like you, who continue to make our communities great. And that's ICMARC, and we appreciate their major support. We also have 28 State Association coaching partners. They help us identify topics like today's topic and identify presenters. And you'll see the presenters that we have today are coming from various of our 28 State Association coaching partners. And we also have 9 outreach partners that help us to attract as diverse and inclusive an audience as we can for these sessions. So we're grateful to everybody for all the work that is done. I do want to say here at the start that we recognize that the change in schedule has been difficult for people, and we appreciate that many of you shifted your schedules to accommodate the change in date today. We're also aware that some of you who are viewing a digital recording of this session had planned to participate in person live at the previously scheduled time, and I apologize for the scheduling error. We're going to be talking today about these key topics of what are the effects of unconscious bias, how can you deal with them, what are things that we can do in the profession to be proactive. And very grateful that we have outstanding presenters on this topic. Tansy Hayward is the Assistant City Manager in Raleigh. She was previously at Tacoma, Washington, another leading organization in this topic, and she has worked in Iowa and Kansas. So you've covered 4 out of our 28 states just from your own experience, Tansy. We appreciate that. She's a KU graduate with a master's in public administration, and she was chair of the Task Force on Strengthening Inclusiveness in the Profession. We're going to be going, and she's going to be laying the groundwork for this, sharing what are the resources out of that task force report and things that you can use to get started in this arena. We're going to move next in the sequence to Veronica Briseño, who's the director of Small and Minority Business Resources in Austin, Texas. She is a real leader in this field. She earned her master's from the LBJ School at the University of Texas, and she is the immediate past president of the Local Government Hispanic Network, a major force in helping to increase diversity and inclusion throughout the nation. And we'll be following that with a discussion from Pat Effiam, who's now the Chief Equity Officer in Evanston, Illinois. She'll be sharing with you how that came about, how you can get organizational attention on these topics in your community. She earned a PhD from Northwestern and has a lot of experience in this field and is a real leader in helping to guide organizations in effective ways to promote equity. So that's our basic approach here that we've got. I'm going to go to a series of polling questions from time to time. We're always eager to learn the groups that are participating. One of the things that we've found is that when more people participate from a particular location, that it multiplies the effectiveness of your application of these results. And so we encourage you always to participate as groups where possible, but however many of you are there in your location, we're delighted that you've joined us. So again, we're wanting to underscore that all the materials from today's session are available in the agenda packet, and that's at icma.org/coachingwebinars, and then you click on Agendas and Archives link, and it will take you right there. But all this is also in all the emails that we send, and we'll send you a follow-up one when the digital recording is available so you can share it with people in your organization. So we're going to take a look now that a minute's up here and see what the polling results are. And we see that about 3/4 of you are there on your own, and others in groups of varying sizes, including some with more than 20 present. And so we're pleased that all of you have chosen to join us today, and thanks so much for doing so. So let's move on here to look at our first presentation. I'll give the controls over to Tansy. Really appreciate all the work, Tansy, that you and your colleagues have put into this in preparing for today's session. And the rest of us will go off screen for a moment and give an opportunity to focus on Tansy's presentation. So Tansy,
good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining today and for your interest in an important topic and for your leadership wherever it is that you're serving in the country. So jumping right in, let's see here. Okay, there's a little bit of a lag. I'm going to catch up here. So in terms of the things that I'm going to cover today, again, I had the opportunity to serve as a co-chair on the ICMA Task Force on Strengthening Inclusiveness in the Profession. I'm going to spend a bit of my time today extracting what some of the recommendations in that report that are really transferable to our work leading local governments. I also, as he stated, we'll speak a little bit to my experiences in Tacoma and here. When now Tacoma has a quite formal equity program. When I was with the city of Tacoma, we were just getting started. And here in Raleigh, we don't yet have a formal program or any kind of formal resolution from the council. I think I'll focus on where you start. So depending on whatever size city you are in, whatever kind of role you're in, or whatever level of formal direction you have, that hopefully there'll be some level of learning that you can take away. So jumping into the task force, the whole report is available on ICMA's website, and I've provided a link here because there's a lot that I won't cover in the task force. The task force was a big group and very representative. So there were members appointed by LGHN, by the National Forum for Black Public Administrators, and also from members that participated on the Task Force on Women in the Profession. So I think one of the key questions here is, why was inclusion important for ICMA at that time, and why is it important for us in our work? And skip this slide here.
Let me help you. Thank
you.
I just need to give a moment.
One more.
On the line, and so there's a lag, and that's why you need to just wait a moment when you advance.
So one more back. Okay, thanks for everybody for their patience. So I think in the question of why is equity and inclusion important to us in the profession, why was it important to ICMA, there's at least two tenets in the ICMA Code of Ethics that really speak pretty directly to the importance of issues of equity and inclusion. The first in Ethics Tenet 2 is recognizing that us as local government leaders do have to recognize some level of social responsibility. And clearly, I think that speaks to making sure that our communities are serving everybody's needs. Second, and perhaps even more directly in Code of Ethics Tenet 11, gives very specific guidance that we as managers or members of local government should be working in our hiring practices to make sure that our communities are represented. So I think broader than that, I think all of us in local government, and because you're here, you already feel that social commitment to making sure that we're serving everyone. Outside of the community trust and the representation issues that I think we all take very seriously, there are a lot of reports and studies, I've referenced just a couple here, that make a very strong case that businesses, organizations that recognize diversity, that are more diverse, that focus on equitable decision making, are both higher performing and are more economically successful. And I think this is back to Don.
We're going to go to a polling question now, because the important thing is not only what other people say about why equity and inclusion is important, but what drives you as an audience and motivates you to give attention to this topic. So we'd ask you to click off as many of the items here as are really relevant, really critically important to you in your work in the profession. And we'll see, you know, what's at stake for you in this, because that's an important place to begin as you start your conversations in your own organizations around this topic. And while that's happening, I want to be sure that people know that we do have, through the handouts on GoToWebinar, we've got all the materials from today's session, and they'll be available again in 24 hours, along with the digital recording. So if you're here in a small group or just on your own, you can be sharing a high-quality digital video of today's session with your colleagues, and encourage you to do so. And you'll be able to benefit then as an organization as you bring these ideas forward. So we're going to wrap up this polling question and see what's important to people in this. And let's take a look at the results. They're coming up on the screen. Oops, just a second. So we can see that a strong along a wide range of topics, but particularly highlighting the importance of the ethical responsibility. It promotes better local government, and it's good for communities. Those things are all important, as well as closing gaps and being good for the economy. So many motivations that you have, and it's important to be linking into those. So let's take a look now at the next elements.
So again, the full report is available still on ICMA's website, and I'm not going to go into the data and information in there. There were a lot of data analysis and findings there that did demonstrate we had a lot of work to do with regard to ICMA's work and our work in local communities. But I am going to highlight on the next slide some of the findings that came out of a survey of members of ICMA that I think are going to be helpful for learning. So we asked members that took the survey at that time what strategies they were using in their communities to promote diversity and inclusion in their communities. These tables give a quick summary of some of those results. On the left, you can see those policies, programs, strategies that were in place in the largest number of communities per the respondents in that survey. I think in some ways when you look at that list, if your community is not doing some of those more basic strategies, those are some roadmaps of some things for you to consider that are could probably be considered pretty prevalent practices across communities, even though our survey sample was fairly small. On the right, those were the strategies that fewer cities reported that they were utilizing, and some of those do tend to be more proactive, more aggressive strategies. And so you could think of this, though it was not necessarily intended to be at the time, as sort of a continuum of where cities were at that time. Now, this is several years old, so I'm certain that picture has changed since then. So at this point, I'm going to jump into the recommendations of the task force, and there were a lot. So I'm not going to talk about every recommendation of the task force, but rather spend time on those recommendations that are most transferable, that had meaning to ICMA, but were practices that likely could be acted on by local governments as well. You will see those that I'm going to speak in greater detail to in yellow. When you see a recommendation that's hatched out, that's simply to recognize that those were recommendations that the ICMA board did not adopt out of the report from the task force. So here in the high priority recommendations, and each of the recommendation sections were categorized by the three key questions that the task force took up. And so here the focus again was, as you saw in this prior slide, was on diversity in the organization. A couple of our recommendations here were to really make diversity a priority and to set a leadership structure within ICMA to promote and advance diversity. That's certainly a practice that many cities take in and have some kind of internal group that are champions that can help educate and help advise. Also, and you'll see on the following slide, another of our recommendations was not only to recognize and celebrate the contributions of individuals, but organizations that promote or advance diversity or inclusion in their communities. I think for all of us, as ICMA is acting on this recommendation at this conference, you'll see on this slide the organizations that are being recognized. We can certainly learn from those communities that are recognized by ICMA, but we can also act on that practice of recognizing either those departments, divisions, or individuals within our own organizations that are demonstrating leadership. So in the medium and low priority recommendations of the report, one of the findings in our report was where ICMA was performing best from a diversity perspective were the programs that were focused on young people, whether that was the fellow program or some of the early career development stuff. And so that's transferable, again, into our communities. I've put examples on the screen of ways here in Raleigh that we are working to develop relationships with youth in our community, either through skills or programming or relationship building with our police department. So I think once we can develop relationships with young people, then hopefully we can cultivate those into either future workforce or involved citizens. Okay, so I'm going to move into the next section of the report. So here, one of the focus was as ICMA thought about structural bias within the organization, and I think there are going to be throughout this piece maybe terms that people aren't familiar with. And so when we talk about structural bias, the question really is, are the rules of the game benefiting some and not others in ways that aren't intended? And I will say in the Task Force on Inclusion report, there are some key definitional things. And certainly as we go through this conference, web conference today, you'll probably hear some other key terms. And there are lots of resources out there. If there's just vocabulary you're hearing that you're not familiar, I encourage you to seek some of that information out. One of the high priority recommendations here was that ICMA really focus on the appointments that it made to committees, boards, task force within ICMA, that those were pipelines to leadership within the ICMA organization. That's true in our cities as well. Most of us have committee boards and commissions that give people visibility, give them access, and give them experience. So I've given a shout out here to Tacoma. This was an effort that started after I had already left, but while I was there, there was a recognition that the appointments to committees, boards, and commissions was not representing our community, and there was a lot of effort to up the game of recruitment and outreach to ensure that those opportunities were getting to those that could represent their communities. A lot of these recommendations were very specific to ICMA, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, but I think, again, the question is, always, what are the rules of the game that you're creating, whatever the policy or program is, and whether it's benefiting everybody. And so last, the last part of the report was really thinking about how ICMA could give more tools to help all of us working in local government to be more effective. And so one of those was, I think all of us take very seriously our obligations to the Code of Ethics. And I think that's reflected in the polling earlier here that all of us come with that sense of commitment to the profession. We did encourage ICMA to continue to think about how to strengthen the language in the Code of Ethics, in the core competencies that they design training around. Again, in our communities, we have similar kinds of things, whether I've given put a slide up here on the City of Raleigh's organizational competencies, the things that we talk about, that we rank our that document is what helps guide some of our mid-year check-ins and our annual evaluations. The kinds of things that you put focus on matter in your organizations. In the medium to low priorities, I've actually, this document on the screen is in your packet. And here there were that ICMA bring up its game in terms of the way that it supported professionals. And ICMA, I think, has increased the amount of training both at conferences and examples like this webinar today. But there were also recommendations about more practical tools that could be shared. The document that you got in your materials does give a status update of the things that ICMA is working on and things that you can look to ICMA to continue to provide over time. I think also transferable in terms of our work is thinking about the training and skills that we're providing and those resources within our own organizations. So I'm going to take a little bit of a step back from the ICMA report and again speak to if you don't have a lot of resources in your organization or if you don't have a formal program or formal staffing, where are some of those places that you might be able to start regardless of what your position is? And some of these are fundamental parts of our job. So I think part of I'm going to reiterate this later, is a lot of this work doesn't have to be new work. A lot of this is how we approach our work. And so many of the next four slides are going to focus on things that are inherently the work of leadership that we do in our organizations. And I think there are opportunities to add an equity lens to that work. So first, most of us are working on our organizational culture and values. And part of the question is diversity, is inclusion, is equity, regardless of, sometimes we use some of those terms interchangeably, is that a part of the story that you're telling in your organization? You can see on this slide here, City of Raleigh, we have organizational values that we paste on everything. Diversity is one of those. And so as we're talking to new employees, we're talking about these values as we're hiring employees, we're looking to see whether they exhibit characteristics of our values. We've done some capacity building. The Government Alliance for Racial Equity, GEAR, we've had them come to our organization and do training for our elected officials and our key management staff. A lot of our departments are beginning to participate in some cohorts that are kind of peer support networks through GEAR to learn more about what other people are doing. And we have gone through intentionally in our strategic plan to say, does our strategic plan reflect us trying to make sure that all of our residents are benefiting from our work, and we've identified those initiatives that most advance equity and inclusion in our community. Data, all of us increasingly are trying to encourage our staff to use data to inform decision making, and there are a lot of data sets that already exist and those that you can cultivate to better understand the impacts that your decisions are having on specific communities in your organization. The American Community Survey has a lot of demographic data that people can mine pretty easily. Many states require health departments to do what's called a health equity and social determinants of health study, and there is a lot of rich data about disparities and access in your communities that really could help to inform investments in parks and transportation and where you have food deserts or other kinds of social issues that might be creating equitable differences and outcomes. We should always be thinking about the representativeness of any of our outreach or our involvement processes. And when you can recognize that you're not reaching everybody, lots of strategies there. I mean, to think about, are you including alternative languages? Are you being smart about when and where meetings are being scheduled? Are you looking to those community partners to partner with you in outreach to reach residents that you're not able to reach? Many of our communities already do citizen satisfaction surveys, and most of those have a demographic element to them. In Raleigh, we oversample in that so that we can have some level of data integrity at the point that we want to look at subparts of our population to see if different parts of our community are perceiving our services or the effectiveness of our services differently. And last, GIS has become a really significant tool for all of us. And many communities have gone through a process of identifying where are their racially concentrated areas of poverty and are there unique needs in terms of service delivery from the city. Third here is all of our organizations hire people and we seek out services to buy or people to do our work for us. So for us in our HR dashboard, diversity is one of our key metrics. Oftentimes we do seek out the assistance of recruiters. I think making sure that a third-party recruiter that you partner with represents your values is very important. And also, thinking of cultural competency as a key skill. I've included an example of an interview question that we asked recently when we hired a solid waste services department to make it clear even to our candidates that that was going to be an important skill set for us. And in most of your organizations, you probably already have some contracting programs, but I think making sure that they have the weight and focus of your leadership will help to make sure that the people take those programs seriously. And last, you know, I'm going to only speak at a high level, and I think some of the other presenters will go deeper into this idea of structural bias. But we definitely want to think as we're designing programs or policies or rules that we don't overrepresent or underrepresent particular communities. And I'm going to give two examples, one from here in Raleigh. We have a very data-driven process to determine where we're going to make traffic calming investments or streetscape investments. We have recognized that our criteria really weights the number of car trips on a particular corridor and making those investments. What that does inherently is neighborhoods that have low car ownership or are more reliant on transit, it is harder for them to access those programs and services. So we are actually in the process of trying to identify how do we reconfigure some of that weighting and criteria to better recognize the importance of pedestrian and transit activity there. So in that case, there's an example where an underprivileged community might be underrepresented because of the way that we've structured that program. The second example I gave is one when I was with the city of Tacoma. Tacoma has a very proactive curfew intervention program where they try to connect youth with social services. But we found there that young African-American boys were being more often interacting with that program. Now, it was intended to be a positive program, but ultimately, again, there was some recognition that regardless, people were being involved at different rates in that program. And so the question there, again, was that an intentional or an unintentional outcome of that the way the program was set up? So some of my key takeaways here again is equity and inclusion is a key value and skill for local leaders, no matter what your role is. There are lots of opportunities to demonstrate leadership in lots of different ways, whether that's being a source of data or helping to steer the organizational culture. Whatever your role is, there's likely some way that you can make a contribution. And there are lots of resources in other cities doing great work. So just so that you'd have some links of some of the resources that I've found personally valuable, those are available on the screen to make sure that you can continue to look and find resources that are going to be helpful. Thank you.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much, Tansy. This is really a super kickoff for this session, and appreciate all the attention that you're giving to these topics and your sharing what ICMA is doing around this. There were a number of strategies that you heard from Tansy, and I want to see how many of these initiative areas you feel would be relevant and appropriate for your organization. So click off as many as you see on the polling question here that you think your agency would do well to give attention to, so that we can get some feedback from you and you can be active learners in this whole process. One of the things that I'm wondering about is you moved from Tacoma, which had a very formalized and organized program, to Raleigh, which is an emerging program. What have you found as you've moved from one agency to another? Are some of the things that are transferable and some of the things that you would advise people to give very particularized attention to in terms of their own setting?
And let me say, when I was with the City of Tacoma, and for those that want to learn, I think a lot about my peers at the time in Tacoma and those that continue to do great work there, and they have an amazing program with some of the work they've done. When I was there, we were really just beginning to figure out what that formal path was going to be, and we were learning from a number of other people as well. So no matter where you are in that cycle, there are people that are somewhere else that you can be learning from. And I think, you know, we always look to some degree to our elected officials to take some level of lead, and there's a little bit of tension there, but there are a lot of things that can happen in the day-to-day management of the city outside of any kind of mandate from the council. And the last thing that I would say is likely true, is was true in Tacoma, is true in Raleigh, is at the point we started to ask the question and trying to inventory what we were doing, we found that we had lots of leaders throughout the organization and lots of initiatives that were already consistent with the themes of equity and inclusion. We had never been able to pull them together in a single place to tell a story about the city's commitment. And it was powerful at the point that you could collate all that information and share a narrative that really spoke to the value and values and commitment of the organization. So my guess is that for most organizations, you already have a start that you can recognize and build on.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tansy. And as we can see from the polling results here, very high interest in recognizing the impacts of structural bias on programs and policies, and giving attention to that. And the whole idea of embedding equity in organizational culture is large, as well as interest in the others of identifying and developing data and using hiring and contracting. And in fact, on the topic of hiring and contracting, that really brings us to our next presenter. And that is Veronica Bursino. And Veronica, let me give you the controls here, and I'm also backing you up. So we'll be covering that along the way. And Veronica, as I introduced before, has really been working at a sort of a core role in this of how do you not only create equity in the programs and so on, but how do you support small and minority businesses out in the community as well to help them be successful and vibrant. So, Veronica, we're so delighted to have you and LGHN represented here today. We can't hear you, Veronica. You're on mute.
I unmuted. Sorry about that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be with you all today, and thank you for joining us to all our attendees. Really appreciate you taking the interest in such an important topic and conversation. So as Don mentioned, I am with the Small Minority Business Resources Department in the City of Austin, which is my main focus of what we do is minority and women-owned businesses in contracting, particularly with the city. I'm also the immediate past president of the Local Government Hispanic Network, and this discussion is very similar to the discussions that we have as an organization and what we are trying to promote within the city management profession. So today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about those three main areas, what we as the City of Austin have done in this regard, what my department has done at SMBR, and then what our organization has done and can offer as resources to you and your organization. Oops, I went too fast, sorry.
Oops, let me help you get back.
Thank you. There was a little hard to see. So the first area is the City of Austin. To give you an idea of what we're looking at in terms of our demographics, we have 967,000 as of 2018 in our city. The breakdown of race or ethnicity is from 2014. That gives you an idea of the diverse community that we have here in Austin. It is a majority-minority community, so the discussion of equity and unconscious bias are very important to us as a city. One of the main things that I think that the voters of the city of Austin did to bring to light the idea of equity is change our form of government. So, well, not our form of government, but the way our city council members are elected. Previously, we were the largest metropolitan to still have at-large city elections and council districts, and that recently changed in 2014, so 4 years ago. We went to a 10-1 system or to district elections. The result was a more diverse council, definitely geographically. We saw in our former council, most of our council members actually came from the same zip code. They were right in the center of the city, and some of our outlying areas felt like they didn't have a voice on council. But it also brought a more diverse council in terms of ethnicity. As you see previously, there was one African-American and one Hispanic on council. We had what was called a gentleman's agreement. That reserved two of those at-large spots for these two ethnic groups. In 2014, and as you saw, the Hispanic population in Austin is almost 40%, is at about 36-35%. The result of the 10-1 structure was three Hispanics on the city council. It also resulted in a majority woman-led city council. That was the first time we've seen that in the city of Austin. So six women on council. Brought some additional diversity to our leadership. And I started with council because I think that's important, that if that is the direction that council is going in terms of bringing equity to the limelight, bringing it to the forefront, it results in policies that give us the direction that we need on the administration side. So these are highlights of some of the areas where council has taken action about 2-3 years ago. They created our equity office, and Tansy talked a little bit about cities and local governments having equity offices. And this is the sample resolution in regards to that. And I'm going to go a little bit more into detail into our equity office now that it is established and what it has done. They've also passed resolutions regarding executive recruitments and making sure that the executive team is diverse and reflects the community that we serve. They most recently, just this past June, passed two resolutions, one having us look at the viability of having a civil rights office here at the City of Austin. I know other cities do have a civil rights office. We do not. We have several. We have the equity office. We have my department that deals with contracting. We have our human resources department that deals with civil rights. As well, so looking at having a center where it coordinates all of these efforts. And then finally, they directed the city manager to look at the creation of an immigrant affairs office. So this would provide support to our immigrant community here in the city of Austin and a resource for them. So I want to talk a little bit more about our equity office, and this is one of my favorite graphs of what equity means. The discussion from council and now from our management, as well, is equity is important. When we're looking at the city services that we provide, the resources that we have, how are we providing them to our citizens, and are we doing it in an equitable manner? So the Equity Office was created in 2016. The mission of the Equity Office is that we look at things with an equity lens. Brian Oakes, our equity officer, is part of our executive team. And he does challenge us in our discussions and our policies and how we move forward with our procedures to look at, are we providing the services to the City of Austin in an equitable way? The Equity Office created an equity assessment tool. They've started with this tool, applying it to departments. They started with, I believe, about five departments in the first year to have them go through the process. And they looked at everything from budget to the diversity of the employees, and at different levels, what does the management of the department look like versus the administrative staff and so forth. They also look at all the services they provide and make recommendations on how we as departments can do better jobs. Here's a sample of their website to give you an idea. Some of the things I've talked about are here, but also I wanted to have the link shared in case anybody would like to delve a little bit more into our equity office and what they've done here in the city of Austin. One of the other areas where we've really focused our efforts is in hiring practices, and I have certainly found helpfulness in this as a particularly as a department that deals with equity and the importance of diversity and inclusion, I find it very important to have a staff that reflects the groups that we're working for. Some of the things that I have found that help and we use across the city is we often use phone interviews. In my experience, we start with a phone interview and then go to an in-person interview. The reason why I added this here is because in my experience, that has really helped me focus on the candidate and what their qualities are, what they bring to the table, without knowing necessarily their ethnic background. So that has been a helpful tool for me. At the city, our human resources department is insistent upon having diverse panels, which I found very helpful. So we make sure that our interview panels represent all ethnic groups, a nice gender balance, and as well as diversity from both within your department and in other departments, so that we can have the perspective of our fellow departments and the folks that we work with on the candidates that we're bringing in, and get some additional diversity in that regard as well. And then finally, our affinity organizations. As I mentioned, I represent the Local Government Hispanic Network. We also have local affinity groups here at the City of Austin, and I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about them. But we use these at the national level. There's also the NFBPA, the National Forum for Black Public Administrators, as well as INAPA, which is a new Asian American group that has started in California. And when I'm looking at an executive recruitment, I know the city manager as well and our city management team, they rely heavily on these affinity groups to help in recruiting and helping get the word out. So that really helps diversify your candidate pool. When it's not an executive recruitment, but any recruitment that we're doing here internally in my department, I am sure to use our local affinity groups. Not only does it increase the opportunity for a diverse candidate pool, but it also really gives an opportunity for our local, our current city employees to have an opportunity for development and growth. I mentioned our affinity groups here with the City of Austin. I've listed them on the page. They're very active, and we see them as a viable resource to the executive team, but also to us as an organization. And some of the things that I really think have helped with having our affinity groups, they do professional development, they do networking. I included the example of SpeedNet mentoring here because this is something that collectively all of the groups have worked together to do for the past several years now. And it is an opportunity for the speed dating concept, where we have our directors, assistant directors, city manager, and assistant city managers sit down and we open it up to employees across the city to come and have 10 minutes with the mentor, ask any questions they may want, have a discussion. And I highlighted this because I've participated as a mentor for many years, and it's really helped me get an idea of who's out there in the organization, what their interests are, people that you might not have seen in a certain light or interested in a certain role, you might learn they are. And it helps me when I then have a vacancy to reach out and remember a person who had approached me in this setting. It also allows employees to have conversations with directors that they may ordinarily be nervous about. It eases that conversation, that opportunity for conversation, and lets somebody really show a director or an assistant city manager or the city manager what they're interested in and what their career goals are. And then finally, I added cultural celebrations. We value the ethnic, I apologize, my electricity has been going on and off while Tansy was presenting, and it has just gone off, so my lights are out, so my apologies for that. Cultural celebrations, we find them so important that we have included funding in our City of Austin budget for each of our affinity groups to host a cultural celebration. It's important because it's important for employees to learn about other cultures. It's important to celebrate the cultures and the events around them. For example, we have Hispanic Heritage Month we're in Hispanic Heritage Month, and our Austin Hispanic Latino Network hosts an event every year where they bring in cultural music, dance, food. We have speakers as well to talk about the significance of the occasion as well. So I think that that's helpful in educating employees and exposure to different cultures. So I'm transitioning over to a Small Minority Business Resources Department, the department that I'm with. This is a link to our website for additional information. The picture on our website is one of our facilities that I'm very proud of, the Mexican American Cultural Center. We have cultural centers for we have an African American Cultural Center, Asian American Cultural Center, and the Mexican American Cultural Center. And these, to me, are important because it's important to have a lot of minority women participation on these buildings. It's a beautiful facility, and the MAC in particular, the prime contractor, was actually a certified minority-owned business, which is a success story for us as a department. Here's a sample of, it's a screenshot of our website to give you an idea of the areas that we're involved in, some of the things that we do. Also wanted to make sure that y'all have a link in case you would like to go to our website and learn a little bit more about our department. But we at SMBR, we're focused on contracting. In order to have a program like this, a race-based program, it is an affirmative action program. So in order to do that, you have to have evidence of past discrimination in contracting. So this comes in the form of a disparity study. We've done several disparity studies here at the City of Austin, and the courts have given guidance that if you are going to have a race-based program, it is important to have a disparity study that shows that there is, in fact, evidence of disparity, both anecdotal and statistics. The program was created to allow for equal opportunity in contracting. And we do this by setting goals for minorities and women on our contracts. And these are specifically contracts that go to City Council for consideration for approval. And here at the department, you know, not only do we set the goals, but we also have a very active post-award function. So once the contract's awarded, SMBR is at the table throughout the life of the contract to ensure that the MBEs, WBEs, the primes said they were going to use, they are in fact using on the life of the contract. And our ordinance is linked onto our website. It outlines a very extensive process for how a prime can work with subs, and if they do in fact substitute or remove a sub, the steps that they have to take to do so. So we do take this pretty seriously, and includes a violation component if the rules are not abided by. And the violation component is also outlined in our rules and our ordinances, but it also involves sanctions. I don't grant sanctions myself, but if I do have a violation, I have the ability to recommend that our procurement agent exercises a sanction. And just to give you an idea, these are our goals. I could do a whole nother presentation on how we set goals, but to give you an idea, these are our overarching, or what we call our annual goals for the program. They are based on the most recent disparity study, and they are set in our ordinance. When we're looking at setting goals, and I won't go into the details of how we do that, but on a day-to-day basis, we go contract by contract. So we want to make sure that the goals are realistic. They're looking at the specific scopes of work in each contract and the availability of MBEs, WBEs for those scopes of work. I think it's inherent to have a strong program that you set realistic goals for realistic opportunities.
Okay, we're going to go to a polling question. There's more that Veronica is going to be sharing with us, but we want to punctuate this discussion around some of the strategies that and actions that she was highlighting that you might consider, and see which ones of these you think would be beneficial for your organization to be considering. So click off as many of those as you see would be important. And while that's happening, I want to acknowledge that we've been getting some very helpful comments in from our audience about things that they're doing. This is even back to Tansy's presentation about people using a variety of techniques to gather data and approaches. Some of the things that people are engaged in, they're using one party is highlighting dismantling racism provided by the Racial Equity Institute, using research and regular training as a way to go forward and to do that effectively. And a number of approaches that people are highlighting as ways that they see and things that they're taking initiative on that are important. One of the things that may come up, and I'm wondering how you deal with this in your organization. Many employees in local government have long tenures, and how are you dealing with the feelings that employees may have that may not be in minorities or in the changing demographics of your community, Veronica? How do you deal with their feelings and reactions on what this means for them? You get pushback on it? How do you engage to make an inclusive and diverse organization and one that's sensitive to that when you've got may have a long-standing embedded employee base?
That's a good question. I think when we're talking about inclusivity, that means bringing everybody to the table. And so when we're talking about the employees that might not be in these minority groups, I do see there's an importance in also including them in these discussions. And I think some of the things that we have done is because that message comes starting from city council to our city management of the importance of diversity and inclusivity. Some of the things I'm talking about, we're sure to include everybody in that. So for example, the cultural celebrations, we open it up to all city employees. We encourage everyone to attend, and not necessarily because you're of the ethnic group that is celebrating the event. We showcase it as an opportunity to learn about others. I also think there's we have civil service in place. Municipal civil service was put into place recently here at the City of Austin. And in terms of some of those more tenured employees, I think that really helps tenured employees as we're trying to balance all these goals and objectives of the city. It also still shows their value to our organization as well.
Okay. And we're seeing with the polling results here that the actions that you were offering resonated highly with many of the attendees in today's session. So thank you for those offerings. And let's go on to your other parts of your presentation here that are talking about something very special to you and to the whole profession, really, what LGHN is up to.
Thank you. So I did want to talk a little bit about the Local Government Hispanic Network, and this is the link to our website. I encourage y'all to certainly take a look at it. So here's our mission and our goal, but I wanted to be clear in that the organization has really two main purposes, not only to provide a networking and an opportunity for Latinos in the city management profession across the country and beyond, but also to serve as a resource. We understand, we often get the question of, do I have to be Hispanic to join? And the answer is you don't. As long as you support the mission and the value of diversity and inclusivity, we consider everybody a stakeholder in that regard. We've seen with the changing demographics of our nation that there's a lot of communities that historically were not didn't have as heavy of a Latino population, and now they're growing. And so we want to be sure that we're here as a resource for those communities as well, to provide resources for their communities. And then finally, I just wanted to add, we work closely. I mentioned NSBPA and INAPA. One of the things that I did when I was as president is have an agreement drafted between NSBPA and LGHN to show our partnership. We've been partners for many years. INAPA's new, so they're a new partner to us, but NSBPA has been in existence for many, many years, and we've always worked together. But we wanted to codify that to show our solidarity and how we can support each other. So we do now have that agreement in place as well.
What's wrong?
Veronica, I'm just noticing that
sure?
The sound is having a little interference with it. I'm wondering if you
can check. I'm actually
up there.
Present.
Make sure that it's optimal.
Okay, I moved it a little bit closer to me.
Yeah, stay over here. Can you see it? No, you can see there. So I'm actually presenting. Yeah, there, she's presenting now, and I'm next. Yeah. So the conference is, I tell you this stuff one more time.
Mother's found it, so let me just try to clear that out.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Try again.
Is that better?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay, great. I moved it closer to myself. So here are some of the things that we as an organization do. I'm sorry, I'm trying to advance the slide, but I'm not having much luck. Thank you. I mentioned recruitment from the City of Austin's perspective. We provide at LGHN, we provide this to any entity And in particular, if your entity joins us as a local government member, and I certainly, if anybody's interested, happy to provide some details on that. But those recruitments are free with a local government membership. So we're sending opportunities out to our membership to help local governments diversify their employment, their organizations. I'd mentioned networking. We do see this as a strong opportunity. It allows for us to communicate across the country, to connect across the country, and share best practices, share some of the things that we've learned that help serving communities with Latino populations and so forth. We have a great coaching program called the Madrinas and Padrinos, or Godfathers and Godmothers coaching program. And that pairs up more senior employees or officials, city management employees, with some younger, newer folks that are coming up in the profession. We want to make sure that we have that continuum of the next generation that are going to be stepping up and taking these roles in city management. We have conferences. We're having a biannual conferences. Our next conference is actually next month in Phoenix, Arizona. So I encourage you to consider attending if you want to learn more about what we're talking about. It's a great opportunity to have these discussions more at length. We also have regional events. We do policy research as asked. We've done before worked with ICMA closely if there's an area of interest. And we can have some of our members do some research and write a white paper if requested. And then finally, we have local chapters. I mentioned Austin has our Austin Hispanic Latino Network. We are a local chapter of LGHN. But we provide toolkits and resources to help cities set up local chapters if that's an area of interest. Thank you, Don. Thank you. So before we go to the conclusion, I did include a screenshot a screenshot of our conference that's upcoming. A little bit more information about what we're looking at in Phoenix, Arizona, in case anybody does want to join us for our conference. It'll be a great conference coming up. And then finally, I just wanted to conclude with why this is important to me. As I was putting this presentation together, I realized that these are three very important areas to me where I've had conversations about diversity, inclusion, and conscious bias. And so that's, I felt like these three pictures summarized it well for me. The first you see, we're at a LGHN awards event, but that happens to be my dad, who was the city manager of San Antonio. So I put him there because it's sort of ingrained in me. He served the city of San Antonio with the intention of the communities should reflect, the government should reflect the communities they serve. And he really managed in a way to where he's applying that equity in everything the city of San Antonio did. And I grew up raised with that instilled in me, and it's carried into my profession now. The middle picture is from our last LGHN conference, and I think y'all will recognize a couple of familiar faces in there, some members of ICMA. But this was a that we had on Latinas in particular. So also it's important to me as we're having these discussions of diversity, inclusion, and talking about Hispanics, Latinos in the profession, as well as women in the profession, and that where those two roads cross, which is our women of color, Latinas in this case as the picture, but African-American women of color and Asian-American women of color as well, I think is something that drives me and makes this a focus for me. And then I included a photo of my children. I think for many of us in public service as a career, one of our guiding forces is that we want to make their community a better community. And that certainly encourages me and motivates me to go to work every day and get involved in some of these endeavors. So that concludes my presentation. Here's my contact information. If anybody would like to contact me directly, I'm happy to continue this conversation.
Well, hello there. My name is Pat, and I am so thrilled and honored to be with you all today. Thank you for taking the time out of your day. As my colleague said, this is such an important issue, and the more allies that we have, the better that we will be. So I'll go ahead and get started. I'm here in the city of Evanston, Illinois. We are situated just 12 miles north of downtown Chicago with a population of about 75,000. I know we have somewhat of a delay on our monitors. Our race and ethnicity background breakup is we're about 66% white, 18% African American, and a growing percent of Hispanic and Latino, which is currently at 9%. If you look in the center of your screen, where that blue and yellow dots are mostly collected, that is where the vast majority of our people of color live. Unfortunately, it's also our lowest socioeconomic area in the city, and so that is one of we do have 9 wards, and that is the 5th ward, and that is one that we continue to focus our energy and intention into. So let me talk a little bit about how the city of Evanston came to this work. This office was established, the Office of Equity and Empowerment was established in 2016. And it came about after our city had participated in the STAR rating, community rating system. We were one of the first cities to achieve a 4-star rating in their first year. This is a program that we started out, we wanted to create the most livable city, and one of the ways we did it was to engage with the STAR rating system, which really does set, allows a city to look at itself in comparison to other cities and how we might be doing. But it has a set of metrics, a set of seven metrics that allow us to look at ourselves. And one of the critical areas, as you'll see on the bottom of this slide here, is equity and empowerment. And thus, that is how my office, the Office of Equity and Empowerment, was created. And we started going to work. Let me say this because it's really important. Before we got to a formal process, before we got to the point of hiring a chief equity officer or an Office of Equity Empowerment, we had a group of committed staff and volunteers who were looking at issues of diversity and equity and started to do quite a bit of research and realized that we just did not have the capability. We did not have enough knowledge or experience with our own volunteers and staff to tackle this issue, and so that's why they decided to create the Office of Equity and Empowerment. So when I got hired, one of the first things that it was important to do, my colleagues mentioned earlier that data is very important, and that is absolutely the truth, and anecdotal data is just as important important part of data. And so we hit the streets talking to our community. My first 6 months, it was written in my contract that my first 6 months would be spent in the community talking to people to hear what they had to say. And so we set up a series of town hall meetings. We had originally said we have 9 wards. We had one scheduled in each ward. We went out to each ward. And what we found in those wards and in those meetings was that no matter what ward we were in, we were attracting a predominantly white female audience. What was missing for us were our Black and Brown communities. We were not hearing from them, and we also recognized that they were not coming out to us. So in 2016, in addition to creating my office, the city council also took on as one of their priority goals to ensure equity in all city operations. And following setting that goal.
Let me just second here for a second. Are you hearing a little distortion in your sound? We're getting some feedback from some of our attendees that there's some difficulty with the sound. Is it sounding okay on your end?
I'm hearing myself just fine. Should I try switching over to a speaker system?
Through a little bit of a challenge here, so I'm just trying to help figure out how we can solve that problem. And I want to be sure that since I got distracted with the sound issue, that we're on the right slide for you. Which slide would you like us to be on at this point?
I would like to be on the next slide.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry for the distraction in your important presentation.
No, absolutely not. And if the sound doesn't get better, let me know. We want to be sure that you all get as much information out of these sessions as you can. So I started to say that after we established the Office of Equity and Empowerment, the next thing we did was establish equity as a priority goal. Once we had equity as a priority goal, we then, by ordinance, established the Equity and Empowerment Commission. And this group was to be the support, the voice of this office, and to be able to do some community education around the issues of equity and empowerment, but most importantly, to set a strategic plan for us. We need a plan, and my colleagues both have outlined where they're starting and back in Tacoma how they started. This is a journey, and so we knew that we needed the commission to help us along that journey. Don, if you can take me to the next slide. So I started earlier to talk about engaging the community through a series of town hall meetings. And as you can see here, we did that as we were going through the town hall meetings. We noticed that, again, that we had a majority white population that was contributing to the conversation, but we were missing Black and Latinos. And so we established then additional town hall meetings that were targeted toward those audiences, and we went directly to them to hear their voices. Thank you, Don, if you can take me on. So in listening at these town hall meetings, the issue of race continued to rise up to the surface. While we had heard that now across the board in all of the meetings, regardless of the demographic makeup of those meetings, what we saw was race continued to come to the surface as a critical issue for this community. And so, Don, if you could advance a couple of slides, there you are. What we know about race is that, number one, in terms of equity, when you're talking about issues of equity, race is by far the most difficult issue for any community, Black, white, Hispanic, it does not matter. Race is the most difficult conversation to have around the issues of equity. And so we knew that we had to look at this issue of unconscious bias in our organization, because in order to move forward, we have to start internally to move externally. Thank you. And so when we look at unconscious bias, on the next slide that's coming up, when we look at unconscious bias, there are several things that we have to think about. One of the reasons that unconscious bias is a great starting place is because race is such a difficult issue to talk about. Talking about unconscious bias, which is something that all of us, regardless of our ethnic makeup, all of us have unconscious biases. Unconscious biases aren't necessarily bad. They're only bad when we begin to respond to them negatively. But the effects of unconscious bias are great on all of us. Number one, it can create and maintain a lack of diversity among your staff. Bias allows for a homogenous, flat organization, one that doesn't demonstrate a lot of diversity. And it's just because you simply can't. If you are in a room with two-year-olds who are not potty trained, there are two-year-olds who are not potty trained. They do not know how to go to the bathroom. They do not know how to flush a toilet. And so you need to bring somebody into that group who knows how to go to the bathroom or to flush a toilet to begin to advance the agenda. Unconscious bias can create a culture of mistrust. Whatever the majority of that culture is, they may not recognize that some of their policies or procedures or daily practices leave out, exclude, hurt others, and so there can be a culture of mistrust. Unconscious bias leads to low employee morale. And most significantly, it leads or can lead to inequitable service delivery. And think about that. This is our responsibility, our role as local government. We must have equity in our service delivery. And so those are important issues to know. But unconscious bias also have an effect on this next slide you'll see. It has an effect on our policies and our procedures. With a flat, homogenous organization, and we may have outdated policies that negatively impact communities. And I want to stress that. I, I don't want to say we may have. Let me tell you that each of our organizations does have policies that negatively impact our communities. It is our responsibility and our role to root out those policies, but we can't do it without some help. Unconscious bias results in lower participation by our underrepresented communities. If we have these policies that are negatively impacting these communities, it would make sense that they are not going to be interested in participating in our decision-making processes. And then likewise with recruitment, recruiting to our boards and our commissions and our staff with a homogenous organization that does not seem to be welcoming, we will find that our recruitment is limited. And let me take a minute here to talk about that. We have been moved in the past 8 to 10 years, we have moved from having chief diversity officers, diversity officers, diversity offices to having equity offices. And let me explain to you why. In the post-70s, we were really trying to get our organizations to look like our communities, and we were recruiting people in that looked differently. The problem that we recognized moving into this new generation was that having a diverse population did not mean necessarily that we were including them in the right ways. And so we had people, we had positions that would be filled, and quickly people would leave because of their discomfort in the organization, because of the lack of inclusiveness. And so we have now moved to this greater idea of equity, meaning, yes, if we're going to have diversity and maintain diversity, we must do it in an equitable way. And so that's why we've made this shift, and you're starting to see now, instead of diversity officers, you're starting to see equity officers. And higher education has made an incredible shift over the last 30 years into this equity. So I wanted to tell you, give you an example. Here in Evanston, we just did, going into our budgeting process, we just did a community budget survey, and we put that survey out, and recognizing that historically our African American population has not participated, we were very proactive. We went to some groups, particularly a group called Evanston Own It, which is our lead pastors in that fifth ward I talked about, and they generally lead African-American populations and communities in that fifth ward. So we went to them, explained to them about the community survey. We asked them if they would be willing to engage with us, if they would take this information out to their congregations so that their congregations would get involved. You can go back a little bit, Don. So that their congregations would get involved, and we thought for sure that we would have good participation. Unfortunately, when the survey results, when we went to the group, one of the things they said was that, hey, our communities are not accessing online materials. Would you be willing to give us those materials in paper? And we said, yes, absolutely. When we handed them the paper copies, this very same group said, but hold on. You're giving us these paper copies. How do we know these are going to enter? Who's going to enter this data? How do we know they won't just discard our data? So institutional mistrust is an incredible barrier. It is one that definitely exists. You don't have to ask yourself if it exists. It absolutely exists. And learning how to attack that as an issue is very important. And so as we moved on, Don, you can carry on. So the issue with unconscious bias, that's very important to bridge the gap between the issues of racism, sexism, inequity, is first to understand that we all have unconscious biases. And if we are in a fairly homogenous and flat organization, we need the diversity to help us see beyond that. So how can we do that? How can we make our local government fairer? Well, number one on this slide, it's very important because it's the ability to articulate a clear vision and shared understanding. I want you to look, when you have time, I want you to study my job description just a little bit more and see that it does not at all articulate clear vision or shared understanding. In fact, it created quite a bit of confusion because it is loaded, and it is loaded with things that people have very different understandings about. So as I came into my position, many people, I spent many hours on the phone with people who were calling and saying, my neighbor called me a racist, how do I fix this? Or there's the high school is charging for their PSAT testing, and that's unfair to people of color. Can you come and fix that? And so we've recently made a shift in my job title to Chief Equity Officer to be clear to people that it's important that we stay focused, that Miles stays focused on the policies, that uprooting those policies and training our internal staff. So that's one thing. On our next slide here, and I'm sorry, I'm from New York, and oftentimes we'll start getting going really fast, so I'll try to slow down. One of the significant things that you must do and get engaged in is community engagement. When I told you that we found that our Black and Brown residents had not engaged in the community survey, we recruited this group of volunteers, we trained them, they got all into it, and they hit the streets. They went out to where our Black and Brown people were, the local Mexican restaurant, the grocery store. One of the women on this team who participated was homeless, and she stayed in our training program for 9 months, and only 3 weeks ago was she able to get housing, but she's been on the streets for 2 years, and she said, no, I'll tell you where we need to go, and she went into the parks and under the bridges and took surveys there. My commitment to city council was that we would reach an additional 525 people of color before the next budget meeting, and I am proud to say within 2 weeks they had touched 575 Black and Brown people with this survey. So they're very simple fixes. As we move on to the next slide, I just remind you not to forget that community engagement piece, but also, and one of my colleagues mentioned this earlier, community partnerships. I am talking about my office has been established, but there are many of us who are just beginning. We don't have the budget. We don't have the infrastructure to yet move to a chief equity officer. But whether you're in that beginning position or whether you are actually have an office going, community partnerships are incredibly important. Here you'll see that we have a city school liaison committee. Our schools were far ahead of us. They've been doing equity work for the past 10 years and are well advanced. And so we partner with them. We meet with both superintendents, the mayor, the city manager, and other key players in the city to talk about what we're doing and how we can do it. Because my office was established without a budget, I had no training monies, and my community partners were critical in allowing me to send employees into their training and development programs. And so we were that those partnerships are very important. Thank you. And so moving right along in this, how do I suggest you get started? Well, let me say this. First of all, my first thing to you is hire a professional. And that for you all does not necessarily mean that you have to hire your own officer. When I say that, I say connect with your community partners, engage with community allies, and get engaged that way. But I really urge you to resist the temptation of simply tacking this on to someone's job, or just allowing someone volunteer to come in. You have to say that this is serious. Equity work is difficult because it's so inequity is so deeply embedded in our budgets and the way that we practice. It becomes important to make sure that the organization from the head down says that this is critical, that this is an important issue, and so those things become very important. Thank you. If we could move to that next slide. Those things become very important. This is critical. It has to be a senior management position. As I said, we don't value equity. We have not valued equity and diversity and inclusion, and we've given it a low priority. To make it a high priority, it has to be a senior staff position that others will listen and collaborate with, and move this and push this agenda in ways that we haven't historically been able to do that. And yes, a chief equity officer. On the next slide, it talks about the chief equity officer can certainly be there. But we have to understand, if we're talking about the issue of equity, it's not, it's much more than diversity. We can get in people of diversity, diverse backgrounds. We can get them in, but the work of equity is about keeping people of diversity. It is about keeping a diverse community. It's about engaging with a community. It's about rooting out and changing policies and procedures, and ensuring most of all that our service delivery is equitable. That is critical for all of us. And I believe it was Veronica who talked about being in partnership and being in these community partnerships and relationships. On this next slide, as we go forth, we have to build our organizational capacity. And with budget cuts and such, we can't, it doesn't seem that we can do that, but in those partnerships, that is where we absolutely can. Regardless of whether our budgets are being cut or not, the reality is that our communities are being diversified, they're expanding, and we have to find new ways to expand our service delivery in the face of budget cuts and such. But in order to do that, those allies and those partners become very important. But equity, most of all, is about caring for our communities. It's about caring for our communities. It's caring for every person in our community, no matter how, where they come from, or how diverse our community may or may not be. And let me stress, as we move to this final slide, let me stress to you that you're going to find that our generation, our communities, our demographics are changing dramatically. And if we don't get along, we will be the ones that are left behind. As I said, a chief officer is one that can help bring about real organizational change. That new voice, that one who can provide and lend direction, is where you're really going to be see shifts. And as I said, ultimately, hopefully, all of us can have an office of equity empowerment, an office of equity, a chief equity officer. But in the meantime, we can begin the conversation. As I told you earlier, Evanston had the conversation going on well before they hired me, and that's important. But those allies, that leadership is what's going to lead us into a future that really does support our vision for equity, diversity, inclusion. So I hope we can together really get started and make a difference in our communities.
I want to thank you so much for all that you're sharing with this presentation, Pat. Very, very helpful. And we're going to go to a polling question now, because this is your opportunity to respond to some of the measures that Pat was outlining to you and indicate which of these you feel would help move your community forward on this topic. So we're going to go to our polling question on this. And while it's happening, we're getting some very helpful comments from people. So click off as many of the measures that you're seeing on that polling question as you think would be applicable to you. And some of the questions that are coming in, people are asking, what might the panel know or have as information about, what some of the root causes are of the problems that result in inequitable circumstances. People are saying, hey, unless we really get a handle on some of those, it's going to be hard to look at them. So I'm bringing our other panelists back on with their webcams. And Tansy, if you would also unmute yourself so that you can join back in the conversation. I'd be interested in topics of and resources that people could refer our audience to on the issue of root causes and how to address root causes. Some of them are referring to TED Talks like by Bren Brown about the issues of shame and other things that may come up that are leading to challenges. What thoughts do people have about that? Sounds like an important topic.
Don, this is Pat.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Yes, let me share with you those root causes. You are the experts. Your community is the experts. You have the expertise in front of you. And when I say that, as you begin to talk about issues of equity and you begin to listen in your communities are already speaking to you. So it's about listen. So if you want to get to root causes, you must listen. But you must listen in all communities. And that's what I have to say about that.
Okay, thanks. Other points of view? Other additions to that? Other panelists?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly a lot of times when we talk about access either to job opportunities or to influence and decision making or access to services, I guess, you know, lots of times, unfortunately, barriers do stack on top of each other. And so whether they're transportation barriers or whether there are economic barriers or whether or not there are program structure barriers, I think ultimately, that might be a more accessible question for a broad audience or for your organization to try to understand what are the barriers somebody might face to getting full benefit out of a decision-making process or a service delivery, and try to unbundle those and figure out how you can. Some of those are easier for us to address directly as a service provider, and some are more social and are harder to access. But certainly the more barriers you can eliminate, the more effective you can be.
Okay. Well, I'm noticing here on the polling results that people were resonating with many of the suggestions that Pat was offering, in particular the idea of partnerships and community engagement, and you know, ways to bring the community in to help solve this issue versus thinking you're going to solve it from City Hall. As well as establishing equity as a priority and tapping specialized expertise. So many things that were resonating with our audience there and things they'd like to carry forward. So what I'd like to do is cover a few more items here. There are post-webinar discussion questions. This is really important for you to have an opportunity to really highlight what you want to take away from this session and to do that effectively with one another. So encourage you to take a few minutes and to address these or other questions that you have for each other about how you want to move forward on this topic. We also want to highlight there are many other resources from the ICMA coaching program, and those are available on the website as you see. Some of the things that were talked about earlier, like speed coaching, we've got an outline for how to do that in your organization. We're also doing that at the ICMA annual conference in Baltimore on Sunday of this week. So let's go to another polling question here, because the most important thing is, you know, what are you taking away from today, and how is this useful to you, and what do you want to do with it? So we're offering this polling question, and while we're doing that, let me cover a few of the other things that people have brought up as questions or comments. There's actually quite a few comments, which is great. So there's a lot of people thinking about this and thinking about things that they can have. And probably there's a great opportunity for a further conversation with more voices on this topic that's coming through. But a quick one over to you, Pat, is someone's asking, how can they get a copy of the community engagement survey that you were talking about? Is that a tool that would be useful to others, or is it very particular to Evanston, and what could people do to access it?
Yes, I'm happy if you want to contact me. I'd be happy to email it to you. It is particular to Evanston, but you can shape it to fit your community.
Okay, and I'm wondering similarly on the equity assessment tool that was mentioned, you know, is that something that would be useful to other parties to see, you know, how, I think you were describing that, Veronica, to help people move along. What we're trying to do is keep people from having to reinvent the wheel. Maybe they can take a look at the wheel you've got and figure out how to put it on their vehicle and get rolling.
No, absolutely. I think that would be helpful to others as they're looking to get started in this regard. It is available on our website, which I was included. And I also wanted to echo, Tansy had mentioned GAIR as a resource, and they really, if you have a chance to go to their website, have several tools that local governments can take and put into place, and I find that helpful as well.
Okay. Well, I'm noticing from the polling results here that people really appreciated the extra time and effort and attention that our panelists made as we were preparing this webinar together to give examples and illustrations from their agencies that really stood out for people, and to give all the links and resources that you did in today's session that was highly valuable. Thank you so much for making those special extra contributions to today's efforts. There is the contact information here that's also going to be available, you know, on the digital recording, so that you can access that at any time to figure out how to reach these great people that have wonderful stories and lots of experience to share with you as you go about creating your own story. And then we have upcoming webinars in October and November on taking smart risks and rebounding from setbacks. Public service is a challenging arena. Figuring out how to take risks, both in programmatically and career-wise, is important. And also gaining project support is a very important topic as well. We've got outstanding presenters for those sessions and encourage you to participate and to sign up for those opportunities. So on behalf of the ICMA coaching program, this is Don Maruska thanking our outstanding presenters today, Tansy Hayward from Raleigh, Veronica Briseño from Austin, and Pat Effiam from Evanston. You did an outstanding job, and I want to thank all of you who weathered there are changes in schedule and everything else to participate in today's session. And we wish you the very best in making your organizations diverse and inclusive and providing equity for your community to move forward in positive ways. So thank you so much, and have a great day.